Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Welcome to the program. Thanks so much for tuning in. I always enjoy the opportunity to get together with you and have great conversations here and talk about issues that we can look at from a biblical perspective and ways that we can apply the biblical truth to daily life situation. We want to talk Christian worldview a bit today as it relates to our students. We're going to talk about thriving at college today with a good friend we've had on several times before, and glad to have him back to the studios. Ted, I'm just thinking, did you thrive at college? Was that a good time for you?
I think overall, yes. Yeah? There were some learning moments, of course, you know.
Really? Yeah. That always has to be that.
Yeah. Right? As a kid, I was so ready to go to college and be out on my own.
Yeah.
You know, and then after a couple months in, I was like, oh, kind of missing mom and dad, you know.
Yeah.
Needing some wisdom and advice on different things.
Sure. One of the things we were just talking about at the staff prayer meeting this morning, a little bit about, you know, lifelong friends established oftentimes at college.
Right.
Did that happen for you?
Yeah, certainly. Certainly, yeah. Guys that were in my wedding. And, you know, those can really be forged at that age, I think.
So we're going to talk about that. If you're if you have a teen and you're preparing your teen for college, I mean, they're campus at the University of Northwestern. They've been bringing all the students in, you know, this weekend.
And I saw the parents out there, the students rather, out there welcoming people with the balloons and cheers as they're pulling into the entrance.
So a lot of that's going on. And, well, we want to get to our conversation today, and hopefully it'll be profitable for you. And maybe just to reassure you, mom and dad, that, hey, you know, your son or daughter are going to be okay. And, you know, how you can be there to help in a way that's really meaningful. Alex Chediak is my guest today. He was he has a degree in ceramic engineering and a Ph.D. degrees in material science and engineering from UC Berkeley. So, in fact, he's a professor of engineering and physics right now at California Baptist University. He got a start at Christian higher education at the University of Northwestern here. And so, and before that, he was at the Bethlehem College and Seminary in the Twin Cities area. He's written a couple of books, Thriving at College, and also Preparing Your Teens for College. We're going to talk about that today. He's been on focused on the family and the Midday Connection and Family Life Today, and writes regularly. And we're just honored to have him back with us as we talk about how to thrive at college and kind of preparing your teens for it. Alex, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
Curious to know, how about you? Did you thrive at college, and did you make lifelong friends? Was that a key time in your life?
You know, I wrote the book, Thriving at College kind of covers the gamut of the college experience, spiritual life, relational life, academic and professional. I would say in my own case, I probably didn't do as well on the relational and spiritual side when I was a student. I was a believer going into college, but I think I overemphasized academics during my undergraduate. But I did make some good friendships that I still maintain. But if I look back on it, that's probably one area where I wish I had spent even more time making and cultivating those friendships.
Well, that's one of the challenges, isn't it? I mean, you come to school and, you know, it's costing a lot, so you feel like you just really have to bear down, right, and study all the time?
Well, I think different students have different anxieties and different ways in which they express that. I mean, I tended to fall on the side of studying probably more than I needed to and being overly anxious about grades. In retrospect, spent more time than I had to on that side of life. But I think other students fall off on the other side. Whether they make great friends, they spend have a wonderful time their freshman year, but they're getting very, very poor grades and not really honoring God with their best in the classroom. So I think there are temptations on either side. If I would say more students probably fall off on the side of too much fun their first semester, and that's a big danger.
Yeah, well, it's not a problem if you're going to do the 8-year plan, right?
That's right. If you're going to be there exactly.
That was just
I certainly have had some of those in my time.
Yes. Well, we know that up close and personal here, just around the building. We're not going to go any further with that. But, you know, you mentioned about, you know, kids have anxiety. I'm interested, as you've been a professor now and, you know, your parent, but you also obviously you've done a lot of talking and interacting about this subject. Are there anxieties that kids have, and what do they look like maybe compared to what the parents' anxieties would be?
Student anxieties today are much higher than they were even 20 years ago, 30 years ago, just because of, I think, the amount of pressure that society puts on college. So a college degree has never been more crucial for the job market, right? The job market, if you only have a high school education, is poor, is terrible, really. You have trouble finding a job. If you don't have some kind of degree after college, associate's, bachelor's, your chances of career are really limited. So there's pressure in the sense of, you know, this is costing me a lot of money and there's a lot at stake, and I don't know that I have the study skills to be successful here, because a lot of ways high school students don't learn the independent study skills that they need to manage a schedule. So when you get to college, you have a lot of free time. You have maybe 15, 16, 17 hours a week of classroom structured activities, whereas in high school it was about twice as much. So you got to really study and set a schedule and prioritize your times for learning outside of class, because professors are requiring about twice as much homework as they required in high school, even though you're in class about half the time. And that transition is very difficult for a lot of freshmen, that idea of having to manage their own schedule and choose to study even though no one's making them study. And so that can cause a lot of different anxieties that first year especially.
How about the parents? What are the parents anxious about, and is that different maybe today than it was years ago?
Well, I think they're more anxious about the finances than they were, but a lot of the anxieties are similar. You know, will my child do well? Will my child make the right kind of friends? Will they get in with the wrong crowd? Will my child struggle to maintain their Christian faith? Will my child find success in their major? A lot of those anxieties are, I think, the same as they have been for a generation. But what's changed, I think, is the amount of money that is being spent on college is maybe enhancing that financial stress of, okay, will my kid graduate in 4 years, or will he take 7 or 8, like you said earlier? Will my child find work after college? Will my child be coming home to live with me after college? And if so, how am I going to deal with that? And we can't afford to always have, you know, my son or daughter living in our basement, that kind of thing. So I think there's more anxieties regarding the professional launching of their child through college because of how the economy has been and because of how the cost of higher ed has been.
Are you still bullish on college?
Yeah, I think college is still a good investment for those who can benefit from it. What I think we need to do a better job at, though, is preparing juniors and seniors in high school so that when they get out of high school, they're ready for the challenges of college. And I think we need to better match students with the right program that is suited for them. A lot of students would be better off at associate's programs than some of the college dropouts that we have nationwide. And we have about 25% of freshmen nationwide who don't succeed that first year. It's about 45% if you look at all 4 years in terms of not getting a bachelor's degree in time. A lot of those students would have done well at an associate's program, you know, 2 years of college instead of 4 years or 5 years of college, more hands-on as opposed to sitting in the classroom all the time. And so we need to help students who are more suited to maybe being a technician or a dental hygienist or something like that, to say that, you know, those careers are okay also, and they actually can make decent money and support a family. And so the idea of everyone going to a 4 or 5 year college, I think, is something we have to correct.
You've been teaching engineering and physics for a number of years. Just curious, have you had to change maybe your approach, your teaching style a little bit in light of maybe how the millennials or students coming in today are expecting to learn and apply?
Yes, definitely. Great question. A lot more interactive opportunities in class now that I use. I use a PowerPoint to show the key points of information, but then I sprinkle in my time with the students. It's not so much a 15-minute monologue from me to them. Every 5-10 minutes, I'm asking them questions, giving them a chance to interact and give feedback, to answer multiple choice questions, and then based on whether they get those right or wrong, tailoring my lecture to what they don't know at that moment. So more of an interaction as opposed to a monologue.
talking with Alex Chediak, and we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk more and dive into some of these areas. There are 10 common mistakes that the college students make, and we'll learn how to avoid them. It's from the book Thriving at College. We've got 3 copies to give away. This is a great resource for your student, and if they're not even quite college age yet, this would be especially helpful, and moms and dads, you'll benefit from it too, and just kind of learn how to maybe have some of those conversations and help direct your kids in the right path. Alex Chediak serves as a professor of engineering and physics at California Baptist University. He has several degrees in material science and engineering, and he's alum of, well, I don't know if he's alum. If you're a professor, are you an alum of the University of Northwestern? We're going to claim you anyway, Alex.
So, yeah. Thanks, Neil.
All right. Alex Chediak started out his Christian higher education at the University of Northwestern, and we're happy to have him on with us today talking about thriving at college. I'd like to have you join the conversation as well. Maybe just dropped off a student this weekend to a university or college campus. Tell us about your experience. 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Talking to Alex Chediak today about Thriving at College. That's the title of his great book. It's published by Tyndale. We've got some copies to give away and love to get one in your hands. We'll do a drawing at the end of the hour when we have the resources available, and are always grateful for publishers for providing those. 877-933-2484 is the phone number, 877-93-FAITH. And you've just sent one of your kids off to college, first time maybe, or maybe they're off on their own and getting packed up and trying to find all their stuff, and you're anxious to sort of help them get on their own, do a little last-minute laundry. Tell us a little bit about your interaction with them. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number. Alex Chediak is a professor of engineering and physics at California Baptist University. He's been on a number of radio shows and written a great resource called Thriving at College. And one of the things that, Alex, you addressed early on, and thinking that, you know, I didn't necessarily follow that path, and I think you were probably that way too. It's like you end up sort of going to college by default, but it wasn't really a plan. And I'm wondering if you're finding that taking initiative or actually having a plan, if that's maybe just being responsible, is that one of the big issues?
Absolutely. I mean, taking ownership for your educational path is a huge issue. It really separates the freshmen who excel from those who just get by and from those who fail. And so it's increasingly important as colleges, like we just talked about earlier, is becoming more expensive, that students really own their path and really have some sense of ownership, sense of commitment to what they're doing, and particularly maybe helping financially for what they're paying for. The students that are paying for part of their college usually appreciate it more. They have skin in the game, so to speak, and they're more committed to getting the most value for their money in terms of academically. So I think that's increasingly important.
And just to, in a society that doesn't necessarily take initiative, I mean, that, you know, we're they've got to kind of work against the cultural flow in some ways too, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we see this now, this passivity and the delaying of adolescence from young adults. It's an entertainment culture in the world programmed at young adults to say, just stay young, stay carefree as long as you can, just kind of skate by. And they really have to go against the grain to go to college, to be ready to, you know, put in 35, 40 hours a week of work in class, not a class combined. Maybe they're going to have a job, you know, 10, 15 hours a week off campus to support themselves, and then to make the right kinds of friendships, to be intentional in terms of not just going with the flow in terms of who they spend time with, but really going out of their way to make those best friends, those friends that are going to be impactful in a good way on their life, and they're going to be persevering friendships, the ones that are going to last, you know, 10, 20 years after college. So I think all those things take intentionality and take responsibility and initiative, like you were saying, because it's so easy to go with the flow and to go with the wrong crowd and to go with I'm not going to study out of class, I'm not going to wake up in the morning and get to my first class. So there has to be a strong degree of personal initiative. And if you have a child in high school still, this is the time to really be cultivating those character qualities in their life so that when they do go off, that they're prepared that first day.
Well, let's talk about maybe some of the common pitfalls of a Christian entering a secular university or maybe even a Christian college. I mean, there's probably a set of challenges for both, but I mean, you got your undergraduate work at in the engineering, and so you know you're not hanging out at a Christian college when you first started out.
Right. So the book goes through 10 common mistakes, and the first one was abandoning your faith, and that's clearly the one that parents are most concerned about. And it does happen, but oftentimes it happens because the child has never connected with their faith before they went to college. So a lot of times you can spot the warning signs when they're still 16, 17, 18 years old before they go off, really helping that son or daughter be grounded in what they believe and why they believe it, helping them find answers to questions they have about the faith, about the reliability of the Bible or that sort of thing, but also helping them understand that the moral categories of the Bible, the right and wrong that God teaches us in His Word, are really meant for our good, and that God's not out to ruin us, or God's not out to deprive us of happiness, but to enhance our happiness. So all of His commands of not to do this or not to do that are there because God loves us and wants us to enjoy life in the way that He made it, us to enjoy it. He knows how we're made, so He knows what's best for us with regard to our bodies and preserving our personal purity. So just helping them appreciate God's wisdom for them, God wants the best for them. If they believe that God's joys are the greatest and that sin's pleasures are deceitful, they're less likely to fall for them when they get to college. So being grounded in their faith. Mistake number two, treating college as if it were high school, not really adjusting to the challenges of college. Then there's three relationship common mistakes: not being intentional, distorting dating and romance, refusing to grow up, then character issues, being a person of commitment, honoring your word, and then the second one was living in balance, not living out of balance. Then there's three academic chapters: not being too passive or too cocky with the choice of a major, but being realistic in what you know your talents are and what your strengths are, being realistic in your self-appraisal of your own abilities. The next one is living for grades. That's a huge mistake that I made in school. So I talk about the value of loving the learning process, not finding anxiety in the grading process. And actually, the anxiety for grades actually makes you get lower grades because people who are anxious end up underperforming in the classroom rather than just enjoying the learning process, doing the best you can, the grades end up working themselves out. The last one is wasting opportunities. Just thinking strategically about your spring breaks, about your Christmas breaks, how you want to use that time to prepare yourself in terms of your relationships as well as professionally to find those experiences that are going to help you stand out in the job market when you graduate. That's a 7,000-foot view of the book.
and really a good synopsis, too, of the issues that we all, we can look back and say, yeah, I wish I would have done that differently. And then I guess maybe one of the challenges is then for parents, how do we maybe have the conversations and provide the framework now, whether our kids are, at college age or obviously younger, it probably works better. But is it a matter of conversations? Is it a matter of what would you recommend?
Yeah, I think it depends on how old the child is, but I think it's a matter of conversations increasingly serious as they get older in terms of how are you going to manage this area of your life when you get to college, as well as allowing them increasing opportunities to express themselves and to have decision-making power. If they make small mistakes in their parents' household, those mistakes are less consequential and they're more educational than the mistakes they'll make outside on their own. So one of the things I would emphasize is, as a parent, you want to be allowing your child to have increasing levels of ownership for their decisions as they're in high school, while allowing them to experience natural consequences. So if they learn from their mistakes, while you're there to help them process those mistakes, and while those mistakes are not going to be along the lines of the kinds of mistakes that they could make 5 years out. So part of how we get ready for independence is by practicing it in our parents' household. And I think sometimes we're, as Christians, I know as myself as well, we're so afraid of our kids failing, we're so scared of what will happen if they fail that we want to make the choices for them. We want to protect them so much that we end up not training their muscles of decision-making. And the problem is, unless they learn to choose the right thing for themselves, when they graduate, those muscles will be weak and they will not be able to use them on their own.
Well, you haven't said it yet, but maybe the word helicopter parent comes to mind, right? So, you know,
exactly.
And tiger moms and those things. So say a word about, you know, our parental expectations and how do we avoid not being a helicopter parent?
Yeah, I think, for example, to take the area of financial management, for example, letting them have more, if you give them an allowance, then helping them budget that allowance, helping them say, okay, well, maybe when you're in college, we're going to expect you to be paying for your auto insurance and your books and your cell phone plan or whatever you're going to have them paying, then how can you start practicing in high school to see if they know how to make a budget, to teach them how to live within a budget. And when they do make a mistake, instead of bailing them out, telling them, hey, I need to help you find some more work so that you can earn back the money that you lost, rather than giving it to them immediately. Otherwise, they don't learn from cause and effect. So I think that the biggest thing is not shielding them from negative consequences. Those negative consequences are painful, but they're far less painful than the negative consequences that they might experience when they're in college. So applying that to different areas of their life, letting them make choices within reason, where if they make a mistake, the mistake will not be great, not be long-lasting, not be detrimental, you know, 10, 20, 30 years down the road, but it will help them process and learn from it. So let's say that they don't study for a test and they get a bad grade. Will that bad grade hurt them? Yes, but it won't hurt them as much as failing a class in college. So learning from small mistakes and becoming more competent as a result is much better than making big mistakes after they leave. So it's having that ability to separate and say, you know what, this might go poorly for them, but it's going to be educational for them, and I want them to learn the hard way if necessary so that they can be stronger when they go to college.
You mentioned that, you know, several times, just the idea of sort of the smaller mistakes now to avoid the big mistakes later. And I guess we probably need to talk more about that. Big mistakes, I mean, when you're out on your own, I mean, it can be relationally or financially or, you know, morally, any number of things can be pretty serious.
Right, right. I mean, and the mistakes made in your house, you're there to help them process it. Mistakes that they make when they're on their own just feel so much bigger because you're not around. And they're going to be surrounded by their friends who don't have the wherewithal to help them process it because they're only their peers. So you want to help them develop their decision-making muscles, so to speak, when they're in your house. One of the concerns is, I'll give you an example from that I talk about sometimes. My wife was in high school. She just learned how to drive. She was 16 years old. She made a wrong turn on the freeway and ended up in the wrong part of town. Well, in those days, we didn't have cell phones, so we couldn't just pull up our map or call our parents, that kind of thing. She had to figure out what to do, and it was a little bit frightening for her, but that experience shaped her and made her stronger for future experiences. Just being able to handle that experience herself by using her decision-making skills, by using her critical thinking skills, by learning, okay, not to panic, but just to say, okay, how can I retrace my steps and figure out how I got here and get to where I need to be going. That whole kind of experience is very formative. And now we have, I had an experience where a 20-year-old girl crashed into me in the car, and no one was hurt. She wasn't hurt. She kind of went the wrong way. And all she knew how to do was call her parents. She didn't know how to call her insurance. She didn't know what to do. No one had ever taught her how to make those decisions. So it's that sort of thing.
Let's take a quick break and come back, talk more with Alex Chediak, who's author of the great book called Thriving at College. It's a timely topic today. You can join the conversation at 877-93-FAITH. A 50. That would have been kind of interesting, but but a lot of good advice from mom and dad. We're getting some good advice today from Professor Alex Chediak. Alex has been teaching engineering and physics at California Baptist University for the past 7-8 years or so. Started out in Christian higher education at the University of Northwestern. He's at Bethlehem College and Seminary and writes regularly for a number of magazines like Christianity Today, and has been featured on Folks in the Family and Family Life Today, and been with us in the past as well here on Connecting Faith. Happy to have him back, talking about his book, Thriving at College. It's the subtitle about making great friends, keep your faith, and get ready for the real world. Got some copies to give away, and love to have you sign up for a drawing for that. Here, we'll do that at the end of the hour. It's 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. And if you have a student who just headed out here this weekend or maybe out soon, and you're wondering, you have some questions about that, you're welcome to join the conversation at 877-933-2484. Cindy in Maple Grove called in with a question, and she says, Alex, are there any career assessment tools that you'd recommend for people who are having a hard time figuring out what career field they should enter into? And so let's talk a little bit about that. We want to have academic excellence, but what do we actually really want to do? I mean, we have so many choices. What do you recommend?
Right. I'm not aware of any particular exams out there, but what I would say is talk to their have them talk to their professors or their teachers in high school who they like and who they in classes that they've done well in, and say what kind of career paths would you recommend, having seen me and in an academic setting, what do you think I would be well suited for? The other thing is getting them experiences. That's even more important. The more that you can get them in high school into activities that will let them show their skills and demonstrate what they can do, even if they're not being paid for the job. In other words, if they're interested in science, could they get an internship in a hospital doing research in a laboratory for free? They wouldn't necessarily need to get paid for it, but what's more important is the feedback of, yes, this kind of work agrees with me. I'm well suited for this kind of work. My temperament, my interests, my academic abilities are well suited for this kind of work. Shadowing people in their job, going to it for a day or two to follow someone who is an engineer maybe, or a doctor, or a business person of some sort, maybe it's an academic environment. Maybe they want to teach, and then they can go and shadow a classroom and watch the teacher, and then talk to the teacher about, hey, why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? What have you learned as a teacher that's made you more effective? The more they can have experiences with people who are in those kinds of lines of work, that will really help them, I think, see what lines of work might be suited for them. So it's a combination of interests, abilities, as well as experience in those fields in order to make an informed decision so that when they go to college, they go to study whatever topic they're going to study, they have some idea of what kinds of jobs are waiting on the other side. That will actually motivate them a lot while they're in college.
You had an undergraduate degree in ceramic engineering, and then they got MS and PhD degrees in material science and engineering. Did you want to be an engineer from early on, or did that kind of change as you got into college?
So what happened there was sort of what I was just talking about. My high school physics teacher told me engineering was a good field, and I was good at math and good at physics. And she said that a lot of math and physics and engineering, and there's a lot of different subcategories of engineering, and you can kind of pick the subcategory. But whatever category you pick, engineering is a great field to use the way your mind is wired, and you'll do well in it if you've done well in high school math and high school science, which I had. That's why I chose engineering. Ceramic engineering was kind of a sub-branch of material science, which was still a kind of a specialty field in those days. So I probably over-specialized in my undergrad in retrospect, but it worked out well because there were certain job markets that only were hiring for that field. So in the sense, we had less competition for those jobs. But what happened is when I was working after college, I got a part-time job as an instructor for the university in town, and students would be calling me and asking me to help them learn physics and math. It seemed to be mostly physics for some reason. And I began to tutor and really loved teaching more than I loved engineering work. And that's what motivated me to go back to grad school, get a PhD, and be on the faculty somewhere, with the idea of I love being in the classroom, I love being with students, I love being a part of their learning process. And really the feedback that I got from the students, what was happening was students were being offered help in their university, but they weren't liking the people that were working with them, but they were coming to me and paying for it, even though they didn't have to pay for the ones at school. And that was really affirmation for me that, hey, maybe this is something God's using in my life and that God can can use in down the road. And so that kind of feedback of, I can do this well, I enjoy doing this, people give me good feedback and affirmation when I do it, that kind of became a it kind of motivated me to keep going in that field. It kind of becomes a feedback loop, so to speak. You want to do something more when you do it well. When people tell you that you do it well, it makes you motivated to keep doing it. So that combination of being good at something and enjoying something, having people tell you that you're doing it well, that kind of becomes a powerful feedback loop in someone's life to motivate them to keep going in a certain career direction. So that's what I'm talking about with high school students, is getting them in environments where they can try things out. Maybe it's a robotics club, maybe it's a writing contest, maybe it's a math club. But I think we undervalue what those experiences can do for our teens. Even if their accomplishments are modest in those areas, it's the affirmation they get from people who know them, who say, you know what, I've been teaching in high school for 20 years, and I can tell that you're a good writer, or that you're good at analyzing historical ideas, or that you're good at teaching, or you're good at art and theater or music. That kind of feedback is what I think teens need in order to get motivated. It's kind of like having multiple mentors to help them realize where God may be leading them.
You know, thinking maybe a generation or so ago, it was about, a college education, it was liberal arts, it was you become a well-rounded person and you learn the disciplines of study. But now, is it all about sort of pragmatism, that if you don't have a job coming out of college, that you've sort of wasted that experience?
Well, I think sometimes students overemphasize that idea, but unfortunately, there are students who tend to say, okay, when am I ever going to use this in the real world? And unless you can answer my question, I'm not going to take this class. So maybe they want to study computer programming, and they only want to take computer programming classes. What they don't realize is that the programs they're going to be around 15 years from now are not the ones that they're learning now anyway. And really what's going to help them the most is their critical thinking skills, their ability to generalize what they learn in one area and apply it somewhere else, communication skills, public speaking skills. So I still am an advocate for a well-rounded liberal arts education, even for engineering students, which is what I'm in. I think it's very, very important because it teaches them how to think well, how to live well, how to apply what they've learned in one context to a different context. So I still think it's very important to get a broad education, because the career path of the future, there's going to be more and more need for integration and people switching jobs throughout their career, less stability in the job market than ever before, in the sense of you kind of have to keep retooling your resume and keep learning new things. Well, that ability to keep learning, if you have a well-rounded education, it's going to be easier for you to be a lifelong learner than if you don't.
I wonder if this would be a good time to tell the joke about what the engineering major says, how does this work? The accounting major says, how much does this cost? And the art history major says, do you want fries with that? But anyway, maybe we'll skip that. Let's go on to the next question. Linda is calling in from, just trying to insert a little, not that you're not funny, Alex, but I thought, just trying to, it's a Monday, trying to lighten up the show a little. So
exactly.
Alex Chediak, author of Thriving at College, is my guest today. Linda's on the line with a good question. Linda, go ahead. You're on with Alex.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a son going off to college this fall to a Catholic university, and he was recruited to play a sport for them, and that's why he's going there, but we're Baptist. So I'm concerned about him keeping his faith while he's there. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere, and I'm not sure how to get him plugged into something or how to maintain his faith and maybe help it to grow there.
That's a big question and a good one. Thanks, Linda. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, what I would say is help him look online for churches in the area that might be good fits for him, so that before he goes even, he kind of has two or three in mind that, hey, I'm going to go visit on a Sunday morning. Maybe he could even get a hold of someone at the church, but via email, and say, hey, I'm going to come visit your church next Sunday. Could we have coffee before or after the service or something like that? So that he actually has a personal connection when he's there of one or two or three people that he could meet and connect with in order to see if that church is a good fit for him. And I think it helps to have names and faces before you go, because you're much more likely to get up on a Sunday morning and go to church if you know someone's waiting for you than if no one's going to see you and no one's going to know if you're not there, and maybe I'll just sleep in. So I think there's more of a positive peer pressure, if you will, if people are waiting for you and expecting you to be there and wanting to meet you. There are things at Catholic University, but really, that's what she said, I think, probably going to be better off than a lot of state universities in terms of the religious climate, in that other students may also be serious about practicing their Catholicism, which would be probably a better moral influence than he might otherwise have elsewhere. So in one sense, you kind of have that that advantage as well. So that'd be what I said.
And there's I assume that there's probably, you know, as much issues of maybe just attrition as sort of willfully, going against the faith of your, family and your growing up, right? You get the college, university, and say, well, maybe I'll just sleep in. So it's not that I'm, willfully giving it up, but I just, it's just not the most important thing for me right now.
Yes, yeah. And the concerning thing about it, though, is that a Christianity that's not practiced today often becomes Christianity that's absent tomorrow. We've seen that happen a lot. When someone starts to not practice their faith, it results in slow deprivation, and over time it no longer is part of their life. So that is the concern when someone says, oh, I'm just not going to practice my faith when I'm in college, or I'm going to be too busy with my classes to go to church. The concern is that it becomes a habit that is hard to break when they get out of college, because if it's hard to find a church when you go to college, it's also hard to find a church when you graduate college. And so it being part of maintaining that faith part of your life when you're at college, I think, is crucially important. And something we should talk about before the children leave to college. That way, they're already thinking about it. They're already realizing that, hey, there's going to be these temptations. There's going to be these distractions. There's going to be a million other things to do. What is going to be my plan to make sure that I'm growing in my faith when I'm in college? It's not just finding a church, but also finding Christian friends on the campus. If you go to a large state university where there's 20,000-30,000 people, what are you going to do to find other Christian friends when you're there, so that Christianity is the what you're continuing to build yourself up in? In other words, if you're trying to model your life as a Christian, you're a Christian first, you're a student second, right? You're trying to live for Christ as a student. What are you going to do to be around other people that are going to maintain and cultivate that faith so that it doesn't just die, so to speak?
And, maybe just say a word about how students do find other Christians to befriend at a secular university. I mean, assuming the wonderful campus ministries is probably a good place to start, right?
Yeah, I would say the campus ministries are the best place to start. And a lot of that information you can find before you even go to the college. When you're visiting a college, you can actually already visit a campus ministry while you're visiting the college, so that when you're choosing a college, you're not just choosing an academic environment, you're choosing a spiritual environment. You're choosing a place you're going to live and grow in your faith for the next 4 or 5 years. So you can, whether it's internet or whether it's connections, you can talk to your pastor, your family, your relatives. Who do you know in that town, in that university area, where you could find Christian companionship when you're there? So then when you go, again, you already have names and faces of people that are expecting to see you and looking forward to seeing you. And now it's not just, well, I guess I got to walk across campus on Friday night to meet this campus ministry. It's, no, I'm walking across campus, I'm going to meet Todd and Jeremy and Seth and Sarah and Sally are already there waiting for me, and I'm going to be meeting them when I'm there. It's just that having those names and faces, I think, is super crucial in terms of making you feel you're part of something greater than yourself at that college, that Christianity is stronger than the negative influences you're going to experience on that campus.
Talking about finding Christian friends, just say a word about maybe a first time for students to share a room. Any relationship guidelines you'd, looking back as a professor, seeing students kind of work through some of that?
Yeah, I think talking with your roommate about expectations regarding, okay, what times of the day are we going to keep the room quiet, or turning off going to sleep at a reasonable hour, respecting each other's privacy, that's probably the main thing. And then being able to work through conflicts in a respectful manner, trying to understand the other person. When you have a conflict, trying to listen to where they're coming from first, seek to understand, then to be understood. I think it's an important principle there. But just really trying to use that as a growing experience, that learning how to work with different kinds of people is really, really a good lifelong experience. It'll really help you when you graduate and go into the workforce and into society to know how to work with a variety of people in a variety of environments. And to whatever extent you do have a say in choosing a roommate, I think finding someone who is like-minded in terms of either your Christian faith, as well as study habits, sleeping habits, respecting each other's space and need for rest, I think that's the most important thing. Too many students that are too exhausted at college because they don't realize that you actually have to sleep at night. A lot of times the only time you've ever lived outside the home is for a weekend or maybe a 1 week summer camp where you can kind of go by on very small amounts of sleep. The semester is 15 weeks long. It's much longer than a retreat or summer camp kind of week thing. So it's realizing that this is where I'm going to live. This is where I'm going to do life. I want somebody as a roommate who's going to agree with me on some basic ideas of, okay, we're here to study. We're here to have friends and make good relationships, but this is a full-time job, and we need to respect each other's ability to honor God with the money that we're spending to be here and with the stewardship and the opportunity that it is to develop the skills I need to be successful when I graduate. So sleep and study time, those kinds of things.
Just because Alex is an engineering professor doesn't mean he doesn't have good common sense advice. Like, you have to go to sleep. Alex Chediak, professor of engineering and physics at California Baptist University, and he's authored several books, including Thriving at College, the one we're referencing today. Make great friends, keep your faith, and get ready for the real world. It's from Tyndale. We've got some copies to give away. We'll do that drawing here at the end of the hour. You can sign up for a copy at 877-93-FAITH, and I hope, as you've heard the conversation already, you know that there's some valuable insight you want to learn more about, or maybe pass it on to a friend after you read it. 877-933-2484. If you have a question about maybe a student heading off to college or university, or you've maybe dropped one off and you have some reflections you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you. 877-93-FAITH. More with Alex Chediak in just a moment. Word for us today. Is that Matt Maher? First day of the rest of your year? That's good. Thriving at College is the book we're referencing. It's Alex Chediak, who has degrees in ceramic engineering and material science and engineering, and he teaches engineering and physics at California Baptist University now. He started out in Christian higher education at the University of Northwestern and has authored a great resource here that we've got a copy or two to give away. 877-93-FAITH. And one of the themes of your writing and our conversation has been about delayed gratification. Maybe just say a word about that in today's world of sort of instant everything.
Yeah, the ability to delay gratification is something that any successful person in any line of work has, and it has come. They've developed that ability by practicing it, by practicing it in small ways, and then prepare for larger ways. Being able to say no to something good now in order to get something better later, something greater but later, is huge. And how do we develop that? Just by practicing it, just by having to be forced to wait for things you want is a good way to develop that skill. Not trying to do everything at once. Another one is multitasking, this idea that you can do 10 things at once and do them all well. Is another one of those enormous problems because it's not possible. Your brain can only attend to one mental task. And so sometimes students will try to do 10 things at once because they want everything now, and the result is they don't do anything well. They do all 10 things poorly rather than doing one of them well and then doing the next one well, doing the next one well. So that ability to say no to something now in order to focus on something else is huge.
Say a word about, I know you, one of the 10 common mistakes you address is honoring parents while pursuing, independence. And, we haven't really talked about that. We talked about, parents not being helicopter parents, but how about students? What do you see on campus as you talk with the students today and how they could more effectively honor their parents?
Well, I think it's the idea of as you're getting older, you're transitioning from viewing your parents, They're authority figures in your life, but you want to grow into seeing them as friends and colleagues to be honored, but you want to kind of join them in society as adults. So it's, okay, Mom and Dad, you used to help me with this much money last year. Now I'm ready to earn a little more myself, so I don't need as much from you. Or it's, Mom and Dad, please help me assess this decision I have to make, but let me make it myself and let me live with the consequences, because that's how I'll learn more. it's over time growing in the ability to make wise decisions, over time growing in an ability to have a personal work ethic and financial stewardship, learning how to save, learning how to give, showing your parents that you can work as much as they're working, that you're accepting and gladly accepting what it means to be an adult, that you want to be an adult, that you want to join them in the world of adulthood, that you're not trying to use them for an indefinite period of time, that you want to grow in the skills and the wisdom and the knowledge and the responsibility that comes with being an adult. You want to accept consequences. You want to accept responsibility when you make the wrong choice. You don't want them to come to bail you out. That's the ways in which we can honor our parents as we grow up through college.
Alex,
and then if you do have to live at home, so this is, I have a whole section in the book about what do you do if you have to live at home with your parents after you graduate. This is becoming necessary in some cases, but what can you do to kind of earn your keep? Even if you don't have the money, can you do extra chores when you're at home as a way of paying your parents for the roof over your head, kind of acknowledging that, you know what, Mom and Dad, I should be paying my own way. I don't have the money right now, but what can I do to earn it while I'm here? Having that mentality, I think, will bless your parents a ton.
You know, I know the book Thriving at College, it came out a few years ago, and, you know, you've been teaching for a while and had an opportunity to speak and write on this a lot. Is there maybe one thing that's changed or maybe a question that you hadn't really anticipated a couple of years ago that is on the forefront of most people's minds today?
Well, if it is, it's probably the area of financing and student debt. Mm. And that's grown a lot in the last 4 years since this book has come out. I actually have a book coming out in December called Beating the College Debt Trap. That's all about financing college, understanding the FAFSA, understanding grants and scholarships and loans and paying back the loans. That's probably the area that has just come on the radar much more prominently. But I think one of the things is helping students understand that, you know, whatever you do to pay for, however you pay for college, owning that process. If your parents are paying for some of it, think about how much you can pay for it to help them not have to use all of their resources and savings. So it's having skin in the game, understanding what's happening when you sign a student loan, taking ownership for paying it back, taking the responsibility to understand how the loan works. It actually is not that hard to understand it. That's one of my next books about how explaining all that. If you borrow $5,000 today, how is that going to scale into what you need to pay back when you graduate? How is it going to turn into a monthly payment? Owning that whole process of I'm an adult, I am responsible for how I honor God with my money or with my borrowing and not looking to be a moocher for the rest of your life, that is increasingly important for college students today.
And it is a happy day when, as a parent, you don't have to consider FAFSA any longer. You can just completely ignore that acronym. Those are happy days.
Yes.
Alex, have you got a good class lined up for this fall? Are you ready to go? Students,
I do. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, the students are all coming back. It's an exciting time of the year. It doesn't get old. You know, sometimes some professors think, okay, well, every time you teach a new semester, does it get old? People ask me that, and I'd say no. Every time that first day of class comes, I'm as excited as I was the first semester I taught. Because it's a new group of students. It's a new start. A new set of relationships to develop, a new set of each and every student that I have in the classroom is going to live forever. It's going to make an impact in this world in a good way or in a bad way, and I want to use the 40 or so classes that I have with them to make an influence, a positive impact on their life in the hope that they will then go out and be a change agent in society for Christ in a good way. And so it's just an exciting thing to have every semester, a new start, a new group of students, and it doesn't get old at all.
Good. AlexChediak.com is your website, right? If people want to find out
Correct.
More about your writing.
Yeah.
That's Alex Chediak, CHEDIAK.com. And he is professor of engineering and physics, California Baptist University, joining us today talking about his book, Thriving at College, and some great advice. Alex, always great to chat with you. Have a wonderful year in the classroom, and thanks for your good advice today.
Thanks, Neil.
Alex Chediak joining us today on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the show, I want to pass it on to maybe a student that you know. You can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. We post our interviews up after the show every day, and so you can just find it there, and it's shareable and enjoy listening to it at any time.